that are different in 2010 and the impact of the New York City OPD filing and the subsequent filing. But as far as accounting policies were concerned, it was normal. The last item on page two is something that a lot of people don't really have a firm grasp on, that is accounting estimates. And the reason for that is because everybody always looks at a financial statement and says, these are the absolute honest-to-God numbers, and they are rock solid. Any financial statement that's prepared in conformance with GAAP requires that certain estimates be made. And anytime you have an estimate, it's possible that it could be right or wrong, but it's still an estimate. And your financial statements are no different. There are two significant estimates that occur in your financial statements. And the purpose of this discussion is to bring them both to your attention. One is the estimate as far as the post-employment benefits. That's the cost of retiree health care insurance. There's a boatload of assumptions with regard to that. What's health insurance premium cost going to do in the future? What's the rate of inflation going to be? The mortality table of an individual living or dying. And the likelihood of an employee staying employed with the fund. Those are all assumptions that may or may not come true. They're an estimate, and you just need to be aware of the fact that they're out there. The last is the collectability of certain receivables. And Mike, in his presentation, discussed the change with regard to the writing off of the New York City OTB receivable. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit later, but collectability of an account receivable is an estimate. You assume that you're going to get it, or you assume that you're not. But nevertheless, it is an assumption, and therefore it may or may not work itself out. In the case of the New York City OTB, you didn't get what you had accrued last year. We did not go ahead and recognize it as revenue on the flip side, though. At the top of page three, it discusses sensitive disclosures. And again, without sounding repetitive, there is a sensitive disclosure there, and that is that that relates to the post-employment benefits. It's a very large number, and how it, whether or not it pans out could go ahead and significantly affect the fund in the future. Start getting at the difficulties encountered in performing the audit into a little bit more of the touchy-feely thing. And this is basically to convey to you, because we do not, as auditors, interact with the board of directors to get our information. We interact with the Tracys and the Mike DeMarcos of the world. Nevertheless, you as the board are entitled to know and need to know if there was any issues or difficulties that we encountered in getting the information. This particular paragraph states the answer to that question, and there were none. We asked for information, and we got the information we asked for. The next one is corrected and uncorrected mistakes. This is essentially a transparency issue because, well, we can discuss the issues with regard to Mike and Tracy as far as certain items that are contained in the records. We don't have the benefit of that dialogue with the board. And this is basically a summary of, is there anything that we've discussed with them that we know about that has to be fixed? And the answer to that question is no. Everything that we believe needs to be adjusted has been adjusted, and the statements are good. Any disagreements? This is basically also one of those touchy-feely things, and there were no disagreements. Mike went ahead and said, I have this, we looked at it, we reached a similar conclusion, and therefore there was no disagreement as far as either the quantitative presentation of an amount or the qualitative presentation of an item. The last item I'm going to discuss with regard to this document is a management representation letter. Any company that an audit is performed, the auditors come in during a very short window of time, ask for a lot of information, and based on what they're provided, they reach an opinion as to the fairness of presentation of those financials. Everybody that I'm speaking to right now has the benefit of attending these meetings on a monthly basis and or going to work at the fund on a daily basis. So you are way closer to the daily activity and what's really occurring there than we are. Because of that, we need to solicit from management a representation that all the information that we received is a genuine article, it really conveys all of the information that it needs to convey to us, and it's correct and accurate, and nobody went ahead and inadvertently or intentionally tried to mislead us. And again, there was a management representation letter that was signed by management, which was the Tracy and Mike, and that was dated March 31st, which is today. That brings me to the end of that report to the board. The next item I want to bring to get to your attention is there is a two-page management letter. Whenever an audit is performed, it's customary to provide a letter that says, here are some things that we believe need to be corrected. They either result in difficulty on the part of management, or require adjusting your records, or expose you to loss of information, internal control weaknesses, those types of matters. And they are conveyed to you in this two-page document, and there were two items that we wanted to bring to your attention. One relates to the public authorities law. Public authority law regulates your business, you are subject to it, and as a result of that, you need to make certain filings, I should say. And during the course of last year, it came to our attention that one of those filings was missed. That related to a budgetary filing in the fourth quarter. And the other is not so much that it was missed, but it was very difficult to discern. That is that there is a requirement that the investment policy of the fund be evaluated annually by the board. Now, that's not to say that you receive a report on your investment, but your investment policy needs to be evaluated and updated every single year. You get a hard time locating that activity had actually occurred. Now, it did occur, but we had a hard time locating it because it was kind of buried in a record. It should be more overt, and recording that transaction or that activity in the board of directors minutes is really what should occur. Next item, actually, Mike has actually discussed at some length already, just on the phone with you, or I'm sorry, at the meeting with you, I heard it on the phone, and he and I have had some extended discussions about it on the phone. That relates to utilization of the software package that you have. QuickBooks is a fairly robust system for being extremely inexpensive, and it provides a lot of information and ease of use that if you avail yourself to it, it can save you an enormous amount of time and provide great sources of documentation for your information. I've had some discussions with Mike about tweaking the system and making some modifications to it just to make it take advantage of certain of the features that are in there. And he and I have had some discussion about that already, and we'll probably continue to have that dialogue into the near future. These are not necessarily bad things. Again, these are just things that we wanted to bring to your attention. Because, again, we go there to conduct the audit, and we see Tracy and we see Mike. We don't see the members of the board, but you are definitely the decision-maker of the entity, and you should know what's going on and need to hear that. The last thing that I want to discuss is the first thing that you did want me to discuss, which no doubt is the financial statements. And I'm going to take a little break right now and just ask if, is there any question with regard to anything that I have said so far?
Questions from the board members have been requested. We're good, David.
Okay, I was going to say your silence is telling me the answer is no. Okay. At any rate, the financial statement that you have is the largest of the documents that we provide, and it's about 20 pages long. And I want to direct your attention first off to page one. Page one is the third page into this document, and it's labeled Independent Auditor's Report. And it's on our stationery, not on front of letterhead. That is the only page in that document that's not yours. That is the opinion. And the important thing that's in that opinion is in the third paragraph down, the very first sentence, which says, the financial statements referred to above present fairly. Those are the words that you want to hear.
Excuse me, Dave, what page are we on?
Actually, it is an unnumbered page. It is page one of the document. Okay, it's right after the table of contents?
Right after the table of contents, okay.
Independent Auditor's Report.
Independent Auditor's Report.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, we got it.
Okay, and the third paragraph down is the information, is the opinion that you want to see. If you see anything other than that, that typically means that there are issues inside the organization or other matters that you either A, know about and are happy or okay with, or B, that you don't really have much control over but you need to address. When this thing says it presents fairly, that's what you want to hear in your financial statements. It presents fairly. So that's the good one. The next several pages, actually, and this can be pages 3, 4, and 5, is what's referred to as management discussion and analysis. And what that is information that you have, the financial statements themselves are very heavily regulated based on how things are categorized and what needs to be said and how things need to be said. FD&A, or Management Discussion Analysis, is basically a billboard inside your financial statement in which you can discuss in a narrative form how things occurred. Outside of that, when you read the financial statement, it's just going to be a pile of numbers, a balance sheet, an income statement, and notes that provide factual information, but not a narrative. Now, the MD&A that's contained in here is very similar to what I heard Mike presenting to the board during his discussion with regard to the financial activity. He's interpreting it for you and discussing the key points. That's what MD&A does. And I'm going to skip over that because that's really the information that Tracy and Mike have already performed. I'm going to go to page 6 because it's the balance sheet of the statement of net assets. And there are four lines on here that I think are significant. The first one is other assets long term. It's about maybe a third of the way down the page. And in 2010, the number is 0, and in 2009, the number is $2.2 million. That's New York City OTB. And that $2.2 million was the amount of money that they had reported to the fund that they had collected on your behalf and owed to you at the end of last year. At the end of last year, they had not remitted it. Now, during the course of 2010, there was a certain amount of activity that occurred there, and I'm sure that Mike and Tracy had discussed it with you. But in January of 2011, you got your last check, and when you make the phone call down there now, you probably get a number disconnected message because they're gone. So therefore, in 2010, that balance is zero. You can also see where that same very number is about a third up from the bottom of the page, which says long-term award payable reserve, $2.2 million. Last year, I had an extensive discussion with Bill with regard to that. And that revolved around the fact that you really can't call that money revenue because there was a very strong possibility that you were not going to get it. And you really can't go ahead and make a payment out of that money because you jeopardize the entire ongoing operation. Because you're essentially paying out money that there's a very strong probability that you're never going to see. And that was how that presentation was determined to be made last year. And this presentation, obviously, apparently turned out to be pretty true because you wound up writing off a pretty significant chunk of it in 2010. The other number that's very important is right above there, and it says post-employment benefits payable. This is a significant number. That's almost $400,000. And that number is only going to do one thing, and it's going to go up. And it's going to go up probably for the next 25 years, and quite frankly, I'm going to hazard a guess that everybody that I'm speaking to, including myself, will not be a party to this by the time we get to see that number start to decrease. That's the number, that's an estimate as to what is the amount of the health insurance cost that the organization has committed itself to, that the employees have earned, that at some point in time, you will be called upon to pay. Now, typically, governmental units and public authorities such as yourself, you all pay that on a pay-as-you-go basis. And even though you will pay it on a pay-as-you-go basis, you negotiate it away today, and you commit the organization to having to meet that obligation down the road. About 20 years ago, this took place in the commercial sector. And General Motors, for example, had to put about $1 trillion worth of debt onto its balance sheet as a result of it recognizing its post-employment benefits to its retirees. The governmental units are getting the opportunity to put that on over a 30-year period. At this moment in time, there is also no provision to pay it. Others, you can't set up a trust, you can't go ahead and make a distribution to go ahead and cover it because the retirees aren't able to receive those dollars. It's a benefit that's going to occur down the road. So right now, all you can really do is recognize the liability. The interesting part of this is the second to the last number on that page, which is the $75,000. I'm assuming that most everybody that I'm speaking to right now has been on the board for at least a few years. That $75,000 is set up by law. That's the number that the net assets of the fund cannot exceed. Essentially, you're a conduit. You get a dollar in, and you pay it back out. You can go ahead and get to cover all of your expenses, but at the end of the day, at the end of the year, what happens is anything above $75,000 you've taken in, you either have to spend it to run the business, or you have to give it back to the owners, the breeders, pay the stallions, or you remit it back to the OTBs. You also fund Zwei, and you have the person Richmond. So that $75,000 just sits there year after year after year. The next page, page 7, is your commercial accounting, would be your income statement or your statement of operations. In a governmental unit, we call this the statement of revenue, expenses, and changes in net assets. And quite frankly, it's too much of a mouthful for me to go ahead and say all the time, so it's your operating statement. This basically shows you what did I take in, what was my revenue, what were my expenses, what did I pay out. This is the focus of the organization. This really shows, and the significant thing here is the third number up from the bottom, which isn't a number at all, it's zero, it's just a dash. You never had a change in your net assets because you always keep your net assets frozen at $75,000. So whatever you take in is equal to eventually whatever it is that you've paid up. And the $75,000 continues to occur year in and year out. We've had some discussion in the background already with regard to the breakage and the handle and the VLTs and the breeders and the stallion awards and whatnot. I want to focus on a different number, which is the per-person enrichment. And if you take a look at that, it's almost smack dab in the middle of the page, and it's $575,000 in 2010. Roughly half of what it was the year before. And it's half of what it was the year before for two very significant reasons. One is that the top line is down. And it's because the top line is down, the amount of person enrichment that the fund pays out is reduced. The second reason it's down is because NIRA and a correspondence, I believe that they, I think it was either mid-November or late, early December, agreed to forego their purse enrichment, provided that it be allocated and used for reader awards. And therefore, their purse enrichment allotment, which was around $380,000, as I recall, is actually recorded up in the reader award caption. There's something, one other number here that's never been on your operating statement before, or that it's an item farther down the agenda for discussion today. It is the unallocated awards. Historically, every time that we fund the audit, and I would hazard a guess every year prior to that, by the time the audit was done, all the award money had been determined as to what bucket it was going to fall into, whether it was going to wind up being breeder, whether it was going to wind up being low.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm getting a, I heard something beeping over at my end, I'm sorry. Everything that, all the money that was expended had already been determined as to what bucket it was going to be charged to, whether it was breeder, stallion, or owner. There's an $860,000 item there, which is called unallocated. And that is also item number six on the agenda for today. At some point in time later on, there will be a discussion made as to how that is to be distributed. And at this moment, financial statements you have has it unallocated. After your decision is made, Mike is going to pass on to me where the funds are to be charged, and we're going to go ahead and shuffle that number around. And the last thing that I want to bring to your attention is on page 8. Page 8 is a statement of cash flow. And if I were to go ahead and explain this to you, everybody's eyes would glaze over and I'd probably lose half the audience. However, there's one thing on here that is important, and that is this. This ultimately shows you on a cash basis, where did my money come from, and on a cash basis, where did my money go? And maybe even more importantly, how much did my cash position change from one year to the next? And right in the middle of this page, it talks about the net increase in cash and cash equivalents. Now, in 2010, the cash balance went from $1.9 million to $5.8 million. A significant chunk of that has already been distributed, which is good. That's the way that it should be because the fund is essentially a conduit. But what this page shows you is, on a finite basis, all of the money, where did it come from and where did it go? As well as how much did it go up by during the course of the year? And at this point, I spoke for probably about 5 minutes longer than what I had planned. And I want to thank you for all being very attentive, I assume, even though I can't see you. And I'd like to open the floor for any kind of discussion and or questions.
Questions for David.
Howard Nolan. I'd just like to congratulate David for an excellent job performance. I haven't met him personally, but he certainly did a great job of explaining our financial situation. Thank you, David.
Well, thank you very much, Howard. I appreciate that.
Any other questions? Okay, well, David, thank you for your presentation, and obviously the board members, by their quietude, are satisfied with the detail and content of the presentation.
Thank you very much. I appreciate very much the opportunity to address all of you, and look forward to doing it again, hopefully in person the next go around. How's that sound?
Very good.
So with that, I'm going to go ahead and say goodbye, and ask that Mike give me a call later and let me know that this is a resolution as far as item number 6 and anything else that occurs that I need to informed of.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, item number five on the agenda is something we've talked about a little bit, or Mike is going to put a bow around it, and that is the effect of the closure of New York City OTB on fund finances. Mike DeMarco.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, we've lost 30% of our former revenue base. Part of the good news is that NYRA's handles increased significantly, 74% January and February. I apologize for a small typo in there. It was a 74% increase. The shortfall, the estimated shortfall of New York City OTB's closure has had is that normally for January to February, we may have expected to get $575,000 in change, just an estimate. Handle revenue lost about $486,000. Breakage revenue lost roughly almost $90,000. And even with NYRA's increase, we're ending up with a net shortfall in revenue of roughly $360,000.
Yeah, Howard, you there?
Oh, I can hear you.
Okay.
The shortfall for 2 months of about $368,000. So the NYRA's increase has not been enough, at least to date, to totally make up the shortfall, but it has been a decent increase. I'm estimating lost breakage expense to Finger Lakes for the two-month period of roughly $16,600. That's based on prior year's two-month total of in-state breakage revenue of $22,000, and 75% of that was the 16. The estimated annualized loss in in-state breakage revenue to Finger Lakes is going to be almost $100,000. And it probably looks like on our budget we may have overstated the breakage amount. So that'll be one of the areas we can look to for potential source of funds to see what we have available for some purse enrichment later in the year. The other being an expected decrease in the awards consistent with Member Canizzo's statements. So far to date, we're looking at reductions in handle revenue from all of the remaining OTBs, 8% each for Catskill Capital. Nassau has done the best, dropping only 5%, Suffolk 9% decrease. Western has had a 13% decrease as well. And I just wanted to add something related to the NYRA VLT delay. I've estimated that the two-month delay is going to affect our budget adversely about $854,000, plus or minus.
The announcement was, however, that they're going to have more machines operating in September than they originally planned.
The revision ended up, I added more machines for the remaining months for that. It still is using the $275 net win per machine per day that we had used in the 2011 budget. For them to make up all of that potential shortfall, they would have to have a $400 net win per machine per day the remaining year. I'm still hopeful that our estimate is low.
I still think it's going to do better than that. That's my personal opinion. I think it's going to be the most successful enterprise of its kind in the country when it opens. So,
Mike, what?
Based on what Yonkers does and the fact that there's a subway line out there, and with Genting's marketing talents, I think it's going to be a very, very big success.
Mike, what I was going to ask you is, at the end of the day, these bottom bullets, what is the percent the fund revenues down after all of these effects for the first quarter? Based from, I guess, last year, or the projection.
Right now we're looking at
With what NIRA's picked up, what we've lost from New York City OTB and the other OTBs being down.
Down from when, this year or the year before?
Roughly.
That's right.
We are down almost 22%.
22.
Yeah. This is a... This includes all, this is total revenue,
yep.
Including the BLT from Finger Lakes, which is up 28% in the 2 month period. Now on the expense side, there are a couple things that will not show up in future months. On the salaries, under the administrative and promotional, those amounts include separation payouts to Mr. McCabe and Mr. Zito that were made in January. The total of that was $30,000 allocated, 60% to admin, 40% to promotional. So actually, our if you look at the salary amount, our payroll is going to be significantly less in 2010, the remainder of the year. It's the first 2 months, it shows an even, pretty much an even an amount.
Any other questions or comments? Mr. McMahon.
Mike, one of the numbers that the auditor pointed out to us was a 60% increase in retirement benefit costs 1 year to the next.
Yes.
How much can we expect that trend to go up?
Well,
and that's last year to this year.
With changes that we're going to be hopefully implementing, we should be slowing that down considerably.
Mm-hmm.
The first benefit, we had roughly a 40% drop in 2010 for the amount of post-retirement accrual that I had to make. So I was able to adjust that downward. For 2011, I'm going to go forward with I'll be accruing roughly $58,000 versus about $110,000 in prior years. And then the changes in the health insurance, if they go through, it should drop even further because the underlying assumptions with the numbers we're using now don't reflect two significant changes that are going to occur. One is one individual will be electing to receive health insurance from another provider, and another retiree is changing from family to single. So while the number's not going to go away, I think we've made significant headway to really get that under control. And that's just, and then that's not even counting the cash flow savings that we will have for the remainder of the year, starting either June or July. It's a six-figure benefit already, which kind of amazed me. I was surprised.
Other questions or comments on OTB, New York City OTB? Hearing none, we'll move on to the next item. On a happier note, we have $861,000 in supplemental monies to decide what to do with it for 2010. And I would ask, I guess, Tracy and Mike to sort of tell us what, you know, they think we're going to, any staff recommendations on this?
Basically, they were mentioning earlier in the discussions that the breeders have been taking it on the chin most recently. So, you know, if we pay out all the money to breeders, there are significant checks. If you divide it up among all three groups, everybody's going to get a small check.
Does anyone have any ideas on this, further ideas?
I think in your memo you had something that caught my eye that I think makes it should be thought of here too, is being prudent about the fund's revenue throughout the year.
One recommendation that Mike has made is that we would like to let breeders or whomever's going to get this money, let them know that they're going to get it, but that because of cash flow problems, yeah, not paying out until the fall.
This has to be paid out in 2010.
Yeah.
We had talked a couple of meetings ago about maybe doing a program bill and trying to address legislatively. changing that so that we could carry money over. Have we done anything about that? Is there?
There is an issue with departmental bills. The first go-round this year, there are none, unless they were of significant urgency to the budget. Ron Okram, is there anything further on that?
Well, I talked to Chris Del Judas, and he was looking to get the bill in through sponsoring the Senate and the Assembly.
Through an individual sponsor.
Yeah.
So that if it becomes a piece of legislation that the Breeders Trade Association wants to push, you know, we're happy to see that, obviously. But the Racing and Wagering Board, for example, has no departmentals. I don't know if the Ag and Market's got any, but
three.
Okay.
Well, so, and let me continue that. We've already started to push those items through our bill package to the Breeders Association. The problem is obviously much harder to do versus a program bill. So instead of looking to do, you know, one thing, now we're looking for four or five things to do. So the outcome of that, you know, is uncertain at this time, but we're going to continue to push it. So.
Can I ask a question? I think at one time there was some discussion that the lobbyists might try to push a bill through that would change the statute that makes us have to pay NIRA if we pay for some enrichment to Finger Lakes. Is anybody carrying the ball on that?
That was part of the program bill that the chairman was talking about.
Okay.
So that'd be included, you know, it'd be included into whatever language.
Yeah. And that's something that the lobbyists for Finger Lakes, though, might push for as well?
They, in theory, they should.
They're more than happy to.
Yes.
As long as it's not one-way street going the other way.
Yeah.
Get rid of 60-40, where's the 100 going?
Mr. McMahon, you want to say something?
No, we've got that 891. If we were to get any of this
861.
If we were to get any of these things passed, say that we the statute that says that we have to use the money in the year that it was earned. How would that affect this year? Could we use that in a different way this year? If we were to be successful in getting rid of that. Would we still be stuck with that?
Not with this money.
Not with this money. This money's stuck with.
I would think that legally, if it's 2010 money, we're stuck with 2010 statute. That would be my opinion. Unless the statute specifically said this would apply to monies owed from prior years.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
John? Yes, Commissioner Albert.
Is there language in a bill or a draft?
Yes. Yes. For all these things.
So it's being circulated?
Yeah. We've already had meetings on that.
By the trade association, not by the fund or by the Racing and Wagering Board.
Do we have the bill numbers? Do you know them?
Oh, they haven't been introduced yet.
Okay.
Well, we've been working targeting the chair of the race bull racing committee. But as you know, there's no bills that have been introduced.
As a regulator, I have no dog in this supplemental money fight, so I'm eager to hear a motion from somebody.
Well, if we have to use the money for 2010 awards, we've talked about who suffered the most in 2010 and the year prior would be the breeders, because they've been cut in half and they reduced fourth place. And they are the fuel behind all of the system, in my opinion. I would have to say that they should receive a significant portion of that, whether or not it be what that proportion is, I'm not sure, but they should be receiving a significant part.
How close are we on the statutes? Statutory, is that going to factor in this discussion at all?
Only on the stallions.
Only on the stallions.
Only on the stallions. We're far below on the breeders.
For the breeders, we still have to have a two-thirds majority to approve. We're below the 65%, but we're above the threshold where the board has to act.
The board has already acted to go above, to permit going above the initial cap.
Right. Well, Dr. Wilmot.
What if, I think I understand where we're going. Money's got to be used this year. It's got to be used for awards.